The present is the only moment that's really real. The past is over. It's not here anymore. The future hasn't happened yet. It's not here either. The only time that we can be in, the only time that we can act in, is now. All the spiritual gurus advise us to practice being fully present in what they call the precious present. The most important time is now. I know this, and yet I find myself spending a lot of time on the not now. I like to plan ahead, so I have, for example, spent more hours than I wish to admit, bent over my computer looking for airline flights. To a meeting in Montreal or to my mother's house in Boston, I fill sheets of scrap paper with detailed comparisons. This one only takes 2 airplanes to get there, but leaves at 5 a.m. and has a 3-hour layover and arrives at rush hour. This one leaves at a more reasonable 9 a.m. and has a less painful layovers, but takes 3 airplanes and gets in after 11 p.m. This one leaves at a doable 8 a.m., takes only 2 airplanes, and gets in before 9 p.m., but costs the price of a small Picasso. That's not even including the little side matrices I scribble out to determine whether the amount I would save flying out of Seattle is worth the cost of 2 extra days of travel and a round-trip ferry. Hours and hours, I tell you, poring over these numbers. That's a lot of time spent planning for the future. Certainly not savoring the precious present. And there's the time that I spend in the past. The energy and effort I spend trying to save time in a bottle. People have different methods of saving time in a bottle. Making home movies, collecting and organizing stamps or antiques or personal mementos, scrapbooking, genealogy. My method of choice is taking pictures. If on one end of the photo creating and archiving spectrum, you have my spouse, who does not own a camera and keeps in a shoebox, a random assortment of photos given to her by other people. If she is on one end of that spectrum, I am on the opposite end of that spectrum. I do own a camera, have since I was a teenager, and I use it regularly, dutifully chronicling all major and quite a few minor life events. Friends and family groan when I get out my camera. Here she goes again, they say. Of course, they all want copies of the pictures after they're taken. You would think, I'm sure my friends think, that I love taking pictures. And I do, to some extent. But I realize that it takes a toll on me as well. You see, there's a lot to manage when you're trying to get good photos. The lighting, the positioning of your subjects, sequencing of events. You have to ascertain and work around people's moods, hunger levels, kids' nap schedules, weather conditions. If you've ever tried to take a group photo, you may have a sense of what I'm talking about. I can get so focused on trying to capture the best image of a given experience that I miss experiencing the experience. I'm not in the present moment at all. It has gotten to the point where now I sometimes deliberately leave my camera at home so I can relax and enjoy a given event instead of worrying about getting the perfect photo. It's not just the picture taking that takes me out of the present. I spend a great deal of time and energy sorting and archiving my photos as well. It used to be a pleasure. Remember the days of real film? I used to look forward to picking up my photos at the drugstore developer, I'd eagerly examine the 24 shots. That's one different shot of each scene, not 20 shots of the same scene like we do with digital cameras. I loved the process of putting each photo in its little plastic slot in my photo album, separating out the doubles to send to friends with a cheery note. It didn't take much time, and it was also pleasant. Now, with digital cameras, it's impossible. When I tried to keep up with the albums, I'd spend hours and hours sorting through those 20 versions of the same scene. In this one, her smile is better, but his eyes are squinting. In this one, his eyes look good, but she's not looking at the camera and the composition's all wrong. Then cropping, adjusting light and contrast, and if you're making one of those new photo books, more hours are spent on format, backgrounds, and captions. Tedious and exhausting. And why did I spend all this effort on photos anyway? So I could someday in the future spend time reminiscing about the past. To what extent is looking through photos of the past a good use of time? I bet Thich Nhat Hanh does not have shelves and shelves of photo albums. It has caused me to wonder if I should spend more time living my relationships with friends and family rather than spending time preserving images of my relationships with friends and family. Maybe I should give up the camera and take up the shoebox method. Live in the present. But then I waver. Wouldn't I be sad if I didn't have any photos of these cherished people and times? Isn't there legitimacy to saving some time in a bottle? Past, present, future. What is the proper balance? Right around midlife, when our yesterdays begin to outnumber our tomorrows, and as we get closer and closer to the end of our lives, this question becomes more and more urgent. How am I spending my time? Am I investing it as wisely as I should? You may recall the quotation I shared with you several weeks ago about the minister who came across a tombstone epitaph that read, "She attended well and faithfully to a few worthy things," which caused the minister to realize that if she herself were struck by lightning that day, her own epitaph was likely to read, "She attended frantically and ineffectually to a great many unimportant, meaningless details." How are you spending your time? Let's pause a moment to do a time inventory. Think of an ordinary week, an ordinary day. To what extent are you fully present as you do what you do? As you go through your daily routines, as you shower or eat or drive or ride the bus, how much of your time do you spend thinking about, dwelling on, or reviewing the past? How much of your time do you spend worrying about or planning for the future? How much of your time do you spend being fully present in the here and now? When you have a conversation with someone, how present are you? To what extent do you give them your full attention? To what extent are you thinking about what you will say next, or your to-do list, or your plans later that day, or how you will end the conversation? I know that contemporary culture trains us in the art of multitasking. Some people can drive while following GPS instructions, eat lunch, and talk on a Bluetooth phone all at the same time. It might be a good spiritual practice for us to intentionally eschew multitasking occasionally, especially in conversation with one another. You can practice this after the service at coffee hour. Every time you encounter someone, try to listen to them with your full attention. In researching this sermon, I stumbled upon another spiritual practice that can draw us into the present moment, haiku. I never really got haiku before, those little poems so short and on such inconsequential topics. Haiku struck me a bit like those innate tweets, and Facebook posts, at Starbucks, coffee hot, expensive. What to wear, daily dilemma, fave blue jeans again. One might respond, who cares? But when you realize how hard it is to be in the present moment, haiku become shining examples, a little trail of diamonds showing us the way. I will read a few to you, two by Busan, two by Issa. It works best if you close your eyes while you listen and try to picture what is being described. The end of spring lingers in the cherry blossoms. The spring sea rising and falling, rising and falling all day. That one reminds me of how staring at the waves is a good way to get drawn into the present moment. I continue. The wren, looking here, looking there. You lose something? Goes out, comes back. The loves of a cat. You can picture these poets just sitting there, alert and still, observing, then putting those detailed observations into words. I encourage you to try it. Don't even worry about syllables or meter. Describe something you observe in three simple lines. See if it helps center you in the moment. You may recall the sermon I preached a while ago that reminded us that the key to happiness is wanting what you have. The sermon outlined three spiritual practices that help you want what you have: attention, gratitude, and compassion. All are grounded in being in the present moment. Attention, what is around me right now? And by the way, one of these photographs will be up for auction. You can look around you right now, see which photograph you're drawn to, and then bid on it at the auction. It's a photo of your choice, I believe. That was attention. What's around you right now? Gratitude. Is there anything about my life right now for which I am grateful? Compassion. What can I appreciate about the people around me right now? The idea was that living in the present moment protects you from dwelling in past regrets or future worries. There's a woman I know that I hold in my head as an example of spurning future tense worrying by staying in present tense gratitude. This woman, we'll call her Stella, was looking forward to adopting a baby, we'll say from China. Stella had filled out all the forms, had completed all the education, evaluations, and social worker meetings. She had done all the work and was eagerly awaiting the call that would tell her that a baby in the orphanage had been matched with her as a parent. After much anticipation, the call came. Joy. A baby girl for Stella. Due to regulations and details I don't recall, Stella had to wait a while before she could get on a plane to China. It was so hard to wait. She had a photo of the baby. The baby had a name. We'll call her Jade. From the other side of the world, Stella was following baby Jade's progress closely, day by day. And then baby Jade got sick. So sick that the organization thought it might be best to match Stella to a different baby. But Stella had already become Jade's mother in her heart. Whatever was going to happen to this little girl, Stella wanted to be there to hold her through it. Jade pulled through, and Stella was allowed to fly to China and bring her home. I spent some time with Stella and Jade a year and a half later. Jade had some developmental delays. She was not meeting the age-appropriate markers for motor and mental capacity. She didn't have a diagnosis yet. It was too early to know for sure whether or to what extent Jade might reach normal. I asked Stella how she was feeling about this. To my surprise, Stella was remarkably peaceful about the whole thing. Jade was a content little baby, an 18-month-old doing 10-month-old things, but just as delightful as any normal 10-month-old. Stella was able to accept and love Jade as she was, to enjoy being in the moment with her baby girl. Stella said that she didn't know how things would turn out for Jade, but she wasn't really worried about it. She wasn't even thinking about it much. We'll know when we know, and we'll deal with it with whatever the situation turns out to be. Stella didn't spend a lot of time worrying about possible problems to come. She also didn't spend a lot of time regretting what wasn't or what would never be. Specifically, she did not seem stuck in the loss of a vision of having a normal daughter. She accepted her daughter as she was, loved her as she was. Stella was in the moment, and she was enjoying every minute with her whole heart. I've heard parents say this kind of thing about kids with a short life expectancy. My job is to love this kid as best I can for the time that he is with me. I suppose it is the job of any caretaker, really, whether you are caring for a child, a parent, a spouse, a friend. It's what Tolstoy was asking us to do. Do the best you can to be present with and care for the person you are with right now. When I was at university, my roommates and I had a motto that was a less enlightened, slightly morose version of staying in the present. We thought we had found the secret to avoiding future suffering in a dismal world. We told each other with cynical smiles, "Expect nothing. You will never be disappointed. If you don't hope to win, you won't be upset if you lose. If you don't expect to get a birthday call from your sister, you won't be sad when the phone doesn't ring. If you don't expect the weather to be beautiful for the outdoor concert, then you won't be disappointed when it rains." Perhaps some of you are familiar with this philosophy. Expect nothing, you'll never be disappointed. I remember sharing this motto with one of my friend's mothers, a cheerful, warm-hearted, hippie-type mom. But, she objected, if you do that, you'll miss the joy of hoping for something. Part of the fun of life is anticipation, looking forward to things. Hope is good for your spirit. What if you do get beautiful weather for that outdoor concert? Wouldn't it have been fun to enjoy looking forward to it? And really, you might say you're not expecting a phone call from your sister, but aren't you still sad if she doesn't call, regardless of whether you let yourself hope for it? She had a point. As much as I've tried to keep my hope in check, I have never really managed to shield myself from life's disappointments. And I wonder if I have missed out on the joy of hope. As Barbara King-Soliver wrote, the very least you can do in your life is to figure out what you hope for, and the most you can do is to live inside that hope, not admire it from a distance, but live right in it, under its roof. All of which makes me wonder, being in the present has its merits, but isn't there a positive side to thinking about the future? not getting sucked into wrestling with details of airline tickets, not fruitless worrying about future events, but joyful anticipation and hope. Isn't that a worthwhile investment of time? I have similar wonderings about the past. Isn't there positive potential in thinking about the past? I'm sure some people are able to enjoy photography in a way that is less neurotic obsession and more genuine pleasure. I bet many of you are able to look through your photo collections with a healthy attitude of appreciation of good times and gratitude for loved ones. A healthy savoring of the past. There are other ways that contemplating the past can be beneficial as well. In addition to savoring the past, it seems to me that studying the past and learning from the past can also enhance the present. On an individual level, in therapy, a person can benefit from studying their own personal past. On a communal level, historical and political analysis of the past can benefit a whole society. That's what George Santayana said, right? Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. Whether you are savoring the good stuff or learning from the hard stuff, looking at the past can make a better today. I wondered about a parallel for the future. We suggested the joyful anticipation and hope can make a better today. I know that fixating on worries about which you can do nothing is not useful, but what about looking ahead to some possible negative outcomes and thus being inspired to work for change? Isn't a lot of our environmental action based in looking ahead to potential negative and working with hopeful spirits to change it? So now I'm thinking this. Looking at the positive in the past can bring us the pleasure of gratitude in the present. Looking at the negative in the past can give us lessons from which to learn in the present. Looking at the positive in the future can bring us the joy of hope and anticipation in the present. Looking at the negative in the future can inspire us to work for change in the present. There's another objection you might raise to the claim that it is best to be in the moment. What if the moment stinks? I have often raised this objection myself. I have been moved, though, by Buddhist teachers who encourage us to sit with, be with, whatever is, including sadness or fear or any other negative feelings. You take on the role of a compassionate observer. You might have a little conversation with your sadness. Hello, what are you trying to tell me? What might I learn from you? Perhaps your task is simply to sit with the sadness in empathy and compassion, accept it as it is, a part of life. It makes me think of that other Simon and Garfunkel song. Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again. My mother has been listening to guided meditations for cancer patients. One of them has the patient envision sitting with the cancer, learning from it, talking to it, and ending the conversation with, "Thank you, cancer. You can go now." Maybe the question to consider is not so much, are you spending your time in the past or the present or the future? For in fact, in reality, we are always in the present, even if you are thinking about the past or future. Maybe the question is, does your thinking about the past or future enrich your experience of the present or diminish your experience of the present? Consider the way you think of your own past. Does it drain your spirit or feed your spirit? Are you filled with gratitude for the good, and have you found calm acceptance of the bad? Or do you feel resentment, regret, or dissatisfaction? Consider the way you think about the future. Does it drain your spirit or feed your spirit? Are you overwhelmed with worry and anxiety and despair? Or are you able to direct the worry into constructive action, able to enjoy some hope and anticipation? If you are able to consider the past and future in a way that is spirit-filling, in a way that helps ground you in your best, most loving self, the you that you want to be, the you that you enjoy being, then you may not need to do a time inventory. If, on the other hand, you find that the way you consider the past or the future is spirit-draining, then perhaps centering yourself in the present can help. Let go of resentments and regrets about the past. Let go of worries about the future. If you are like me, dial back the obsessive archiving and planning. Take a breath. Just rest in the present. We can all practice this. Breathe deeply and relax into the you that you enjoy being, the loving you, the kind-hearted you, the compassionate you. You know what to do. The most important time is now. The most important one is the one you are with. The most important thing to do is to do good for the one you are with. So may it be.